The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. So this week we're going to be talking about the future of innovation in the US banking scene, but particularly in respect to smaller banks. How do they cope with this? The bigger banks, they've got these big budgets, maybe tens of millions of dollars to spend on this, but how do the smaller and medium-sized banks cope with this challenge? Staying innovative, staying competitive when it comes to digital. So we've got a couple of guests on the show this week that are old pals of mine and part of the so-called fintech mafia. Let me introduce them. First of all, we have JP Nichols. JP is one of the founders of the Bank Innovators Council. And JP, tell us quickly about what else you do.
Sure. So I consult with banks and fintech companies and really help them think through the innovation and how to create the competitive nature that we're going to talk about here today.
Great. And we also have with us today Brad Limer. Brad is dialing in from sunny Palo Alto or San Francisco. Where are you today, Brad?
Just north of San Francisco.
Just north of San Francisco. Okay, so not Palo Alto then. You're at Mechanics Bank. Tell us about what you do at Mechanics Bank, Brad.
Yeah, so Mechanics is a little over $3 billion in assets, and what I do is really head up our digital strategy and kind of make sure that we understand, you know, how that changing role of technology and our partnerships and customer behavior is really changing the industry and how best to react to it.
Great. Fantastic. So, first of all, JP, let's start with talking about this recent initiative you guys have commenced. And I was interested to see that, you guys have kicked off with the Bank Innovators Council, but you recently just announced also the Demovation Challenge. So tell us a little bit about what the Bank Innovators Council is doing and how you're tactically trying to drive innovation in the space.
Well, sure. You know, actually, the Demovation Challenge is our friend J.J. Hornblass and his Bank Innovation Conference that's coming up.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's all right. We're very big supporters of that. It's here in my hometown of Seattle on March 3rd through 5th, and we'll be there, and we're excited about it. But, you know, our view and our reason for starting the Bank Innovators Council was that we saw that the tech side of the ecosystem had a lot of support. They had incubators, accelerators, and venture capitalists to help support and encourage their innovation, but the banks were really on their own. And that's probably fine for the handful of those large banks that can afford their own dedicated teams, but most can't afford that, but they can't afford not to innovate, right? So we're uniquely focused on the bank side of the ecosystem.
Yep. Now, there's a question that's come in from Jim Morales, who, of course, was on the show last week. If there was one area where a smaller bank should focus innovation funds, what would it be, JP?
Well, you know, for me, it's really about the customer experience and really understanding why does a customer choose to bank with you and why do they even need you? And that question was moot up until 5 years ago, right? It was unquestionable you needed some sort of traditional, licensed, regulated financial institution. And sure, we had different flavors of large and small and S&Ls and credit unions. But for the most part, they were really just variations on the same theme. And today, as you well know, you can conduct your entire financial life without interacting with a traditional financial institution. So it's really starting with a pretty basic set of questions. You know, why are we here? Who do we serve? And how do we really make that better? Because it's not the products and the services that any bank is offering today is not uniquely differentiated. They all have a lot of the same things. So how do you really create a better experience, and how can you be relevant for your customer base?
Now, one of the challenges you have with the smaller banks, of course, is that I think I saw a figure recently that up to 70% of these medium and smaller size institutions in the United States actually don't have their IT or their technology for the bank in-house. They outsource this to a service provider. So there's a lot of reliance on the vendors to bring this innovation along. So in terms of what the Bank Innovators Council is doing, are you working with some of those vendors as well to ensure that the connections are made in respect to these innovations, and it's getting to, you know, that the awareness is being built at the grassroots level?
Well, yes, we are. As I mentioned, we're kind of uniquely focused on the bank side. And we were quite inspired by what our friends at Filene had done in the credit union space. And it turns out our timing was actually pretty good, given that our friends at InnoTribe are kind of stepping back and reassessing their approach. And both of those organizations have been very helpful to us, by the way. And in fact, we're thrilled to have one of InnoTribe's founders, Mariella Atanasova, work with us in our Innovators Lab Day in London on February 13th after Finovate Europe. But we know that just the banks alone is not an ecosystem, right? It's these providers of all sorts, you know, both the big core providers and the small entrepreneurs that are coming up with the new ideas. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's quite exciting that these new innovations are coming from outside of the industry, because they really have a fresher look at it. It's hard to innovate when you've been stuck in the same industry for 30 years. And making those connections both within and amongst our member banks, but also connecting to the fintech side of the equation is exactly part of our mission. Mm.
Now, we're going to talk to Brad a little bit more tactically about this in terms of leading innovation from within sort of a mid-sized bank. But in respect to the organizational challenges, who do you interface with within the bank as the Innovators Council? Who are you looking to engage so that, you know, the comms are getting through, and that you're getting an organization excited and focused on, you know, incremental improvements?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, and we have kind of a multifaceted approach. Our first was to connect with the already converted. So for the larger banks, these folks might have innovation in their job title. At the smaller banks, that's probably not the case. They probably run a business line, or they run a geography. And we've talked a lot about moving from the I word to the R word. The I word innovation can actually be scary to some people. I mean, the three of us here and probably the folks listening today, it's exciting. But if you're kind of an old line banker, that sounds scary, and it's about trying new things that are unproven and perhaps risky. So we're trying to talk in terms of the R word, revenue. Right. If we don't innovate new processes and ideas and products, we're not going to be able to generate the revenues that we need. And at the same time, and I think we'll talk about this a little bit later, the senior leadership is absolutely critical. I have not yet seen in any kind of innovative or innovation initiative gain any ground at all without some pretty serious commitment from the senior players.
Yeah, it's very cool. So tell me about the day-to-day workings of the Innovators Council. How does it work? Who's involved? How often do you meet? The practicalities of it.
Right. So as you know, we just launched this fall. We launched during Finovate Fall and really had a great response. And so we're putting all that together. We've had two innovation workshops that we've done in Boston, thanks to Brown Brothers Harriman. They sponsored us and brought us up there to bring some of the Boston innovators together. And as I mentioned, we'll be in London and also in San Jose following the Finovate Spring. So We're big fans and friends of Finovate, been going there a long time. And so we think that keeping our ear to the ground on these new innovations is really important. But we also want to keep it alive in between the workshops and the lab days. So we have an online community that we're building as we speak. And the Innovation Agency has something called Innovation Cafe. And so all of our members have a chance to log on to there, submit ideas, vote them, discuss them, iterate them, both in private groups and public groups. And so really the long-term goal is to create a 24/7 innovation ecosystem and the number one source for people who are innovating within the banks to go and get support and make new connections.
How are you guys structured from a funding perspective? You position yourselves as sort of a think tank, right? So how are you guys funded and how does that operate?
Right. So we are working with a select number of potential sponsors. We'll probably have a couple of announcements here in the next couple of weeks. And we're really very careful. We know that if we don't have a trusted, curated environment, it's not really worth that much. There are plenty of conferences that a banker can go to and be assaulted by an onslaught of vendors wanting to sell their latest product. And that's not what we're interested in. But we are interested in working with the fintech companies and the service providers in a way that says, look, we have some capabilities. We have some intellectual property. Let's kind of open this up and explore and let's jointly work on the kind of problems that you want to solve for the customers you want to solve it for. So we've got a sponsor base and then we have a member base. Our model is a freemium, so it's free to go to bankinnovatorscouncil.org and sign up. Then we charge a modest fee for the innovator lab days, such as the ones we're doing after the next couple of Finovates.
And is there a particular reason you've put these alongside the Finovate events?
Well, it's a target-rich environment. one of the things that we've thought about, both my co-founder Will Trout and I are recovering bankers. And we know from firsthand experience that it can be
reformed
lonely.
Bankers, huh?
Yeah, that too. It can be lonely being an innovator in a bank environment. You're often surrounded by what we call the business prevention department. And so we would go to things like Finovate and Bank Innovation and Money 2020 and just be energized by this group of people. And we thought at a base level, a bare minimum, there ought to be a club we could all belong to. And then beyond that, we think there are things that we can do other than simply being a club. We can actually work together and try to affect some change.
Right. Well, I just had a tweet in from our friend Dave Birch, who's a regular participant. He said we could have suggested that regulation was the great boat anchor in banking. So I think the business prevention department also works. But anyway.
Yeah, clearly.
Now, in respect to the U.S. as a market, because you are going to be out in Europe and you're doing things a little bit more broadly in terms of scope of the Innovators Council, you are primarily focused on the U.S. market, right?
Well, that's a great question too, because the market is making us international. We're Americans and we launched this here. As you know, we have over 7,000 banks in this country and most of them aren't very good at innovating and we want to help. And we launched here, and without any kind of specific effort, we already have members in 29 countries on 6 continents. And so we were excited to head to London, and we're going to partner there with Level 39, the largest fintech accelerator in Europe. They're kindly sponsoring us and bringing us in, and we're going to use their space. So we do have a little bit of an international component, but frankly, Americans aren't very good at looking outside our own borders. That used to serve us fine. We're used to being the leaders in a lot of industries, and that's changing. It's changing a lot in financial services, and not the least of which is, we just talked about the boat anchor and the regulatory environment. We've spent the last 5 years recovering from the global financial crisis. Dodd-Frank was signed almost 3.5 years ago now, and we're not even halfway through the rulemaking process. So bankers are really focused on that. And I know they are in other parts of the world too, but especially so here. We have a lot of legacy drag in the industry. And so there's so much happening outside of our border, and we're crazy if we don't keep our eyes open to that.
Now, this actually speaks to what I had in my mind, because, you know, looking at the U.S. market, I think it is becoming fairly clear that U.S. is actually struggling with this. U.S. in the 70s and 80s was clearly a leader in financial services. But if you we just saw an announcement this week from France where Soon is launching there, a new digital banking brand produced by AXA. You have Hello, you have Fidor Bank. There's a ton of innovations going on. You have MBank in Poland, which is really, really interesting. Chris Skinner talked about them last week. And then you have the likes of, Frank with OCBC in Singapore. You have UBank in Australia. Then you have some traditional banks, even like ASB in New Zealand, doing some very interesting things. There is a ton of very interesting innovation happening out there. You know, BBVA, Lacacia in Latin America, Che Banker in Italy. But in the U.S., it's hard to find examples like that. What is happening in the U.S., JP? Why the problem?
Well, you're answering some of the question of why do we exist in the first place. But as you know, we're highly concentrated. Brad just tweeted out earlier today that the concentration of the assets, the top 100 banks have, 81% of the assets today. But strangely enough, I would argue that the most interesting innovations on a sustainable basis are coming out of a couple of the larger banks. I'm a big fan of Capital One. They've been leading the way for a long time in things like data science and mass customization. My alma mater, U.S. Bank, I'm pretty proud of the work they've done over the last few years. They were named the most innovative bank in North America by an EFMA and Infosys study. But that was something done deliberately by the CEO, Richard Davis. They made a lot of progress. They're doing photo bill pay now. So I think we could go across the American landscape and find some specific examples of this idea is really cool. This technology is kind of groundbreaking. But across the board, I think, again, we suffer from like you say, the boat anchor of, the regulation and not just that, but the massive infrastructure and the telecoms and some of the others that are leading the way in the other countries. And frankly, they've just got a leaner platform and it's easier to iterate and get new ideas out there.
Now, a good question that came through on the Twitter feed was this comment from Serge Millman, who has been on the show a couple of months back from OptiRate. Serge says, if you look at the tech market and you look at, Apple, Facebook, Samsung, Google, it's hard to imagine these guys cooperating in respect to innovation. So why does it make sense to have a council that creates an innovative platform for bankers to share when, maybe it's competition's the real driver of innovation?
Well, sure. That may very well be the case. But there's still a I think there's a need for the safety and stability of the financial system that we have. For all the knocks we can give against it, we're pretty strong in that regard. So as a platform on which to build other things that may in fact come from outside players, I think it's a really exciting place to be.
Now, if a small bank engages with you, what tactical help do you guys give them? What do they get from you that's going to help them get started on their journey?
Right. So, again, we bring together both online and virtual and in the live space opportunity to work with other people. We think there's a tremendous opportunity for banks in non-competing geographies to get together and tackle a topic or a problem or an opportunity, and we'll help kind of be the glue to bring them together and to connect them with the right technology partners. And we really just want to help them share best practices. It's not that we know it all and we're going to share the secret with them, but we can help them discover the secrets that are being uncovered across the industry and throughout the membership base.
Right. Well, that's a good point to go to break to on, JP. So let's have a quick break, and then we'll be back, and we'll ask Brad to get into some of the more tactical questions of innovating within a small to mid-size institution in the U.S. You're with Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. We'll be right back after this break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's kony.com/BK. We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now. Toll free. 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
You're back with Breaking Banks. I'm Brett King. At this point, we're going to ask Brad Limer to join us. Brad leads the digital channel strategy for Mechanics Bank in Northern California. And Brad, you know, we talked a little bit about Mechanics Bank at the start of the show, a $3 billion asset institution. But more importantly, how does someone become a lead digital strategist, or as you say in your LinkedIn profile, a technologist, curator, connector, advisor, and digital strategist? So how did you get to this point where you're able to play in this space?
Yeah, you know, I think that my role has evolved throughout my career, and so I've been in marketing and business development and technology roles, you know, for almost two decades in financial services. And so when I came into Mechanics, it was really about leveraging data to talk to our customers more intelligently and offer them a lot of different products and services. Now, contextually, that has shifted into digital because of the need to sort of revamp what we're doing online and what we're doing with our partnerships for mobile and building out those applications. And to your point, a lot of institutions, you know, that are under sort of that 5 to 10 billion that are small and mid-sized partner with a lot of external companies to provide these services. And so my role here really has evolved because of the changing role in technology and what we've seen from our customers. 4 or 5 years ago, we asked our customers, you know, what type of mobile apps would you like us to use, and what would you like to use them for? And there wasn't the appetite 4 or 5 years ago that there is now. They may say, oh, well, we don't want to use this or that. And then as soon as you provide that to them, it's amazing what the adoption is. And so it's an ongoing need to continue to not only innovate, but to keep up and then push those boundaries. So that's my role here is sort of an instigator. It's keeping tabs on what is going on, what our partners are doing, what we'd like them to do, and filling that in with development on our own.
So obviously this is a fairly rapidly moving space at the moment. There's a lot happening. So how do you keep up with all of the latest trends and, you know, the latest thinking? What do you do personally to ensure that, you know, you're having these smart conversations on a daily basis, and that when the CEO of the bank comes to you and says, what are we going to do next, Brad, that you've got an answer?
Well, you know, it's the partnerships that we have. First off, what I love to do is continue to engage those existing partnerships and continue to sort of knock on the doors, or a lot of times people come to knock on them to talk to me, because it's about understanding what your roadmap might look like. It's, okay, how are we going to develop from point A to point B to sort of leapfrog, if possible, what some of the larger banks are doing? And you know, we're certainly on the Twitter sphere. Been on Twitter for almost 5 years now, and the type of conversations that we have because we're embedded in social really allows us to kind of see things a little bit before they happen. And so my conversations are always starting with, hey, why aren't we doing X with some of those partnerships? And when we're in front of them, you know, I love hearing back, well, we've never had anybody ask us that, but the problem is that we're not having those conversations enough with the rest of the, you know, 6,000 or 7,000 banks that are under that even billion mark.
Yeah. Tell me about your typical day, or your typical week. You know, what does a digital lead do in a bank like Mechanics Bank?
Well, I'm involved in, you know, understanding where our revenue points are for our business customers, for our consumers, to really engage the business units to help them in any way possible to continue to sell and talk about our services to our clients. And so, you know, I may be involved in content that we're doing on the site or content that we're doing through social. I certainly am involved in the larger group discussion of what are we doing with our partnership in mobile, how are we improving our tablet experience. But a lot of it is working with our partners to deploy updates for every type of service you could imagine. You know, just in the last couple of years, we've taken really online mobile platforms and added so many different things that clients can engage with now that, you know, the reflection from our customers back in terms of usage has shown that we're going in the right direction. So I'm certainly very much involved in what our customers are doing. And so one of the things I think in a community institution that you're probably more engaged with is, what is the response on a daily basis from your customers to the deployments of changes to your applications? You know, so I'm in the call center. I'm listening to feedback via social, and that's what you do. You have to wear a lot of hats.
So in respect to this process of ideation and pushing innovation through, we've had a question from the Twitter feed, which is, what's the biggest hurdle that stands in the way of this process within a smaller bank? Because a larger bank might have a large dedicated specialist innovation team or something like that, but at a smaller institution is a little bit more pragmatic. What's the big hurdles?
You know, I'd like to say that agility is one of smaller banks, excuse me, and credit union strengths. I think it needs to be. So when you have a head of innovation in a incubator in an innovation lab and direct bank sort of experiments out there from some of the larger players, what they're doing is iterating in smaller, defined spaces. And we just can't afford to have that infrastructure. And so we need to continue to push those partnerships as much as we can and really define the needs of our customers to be able to compete. You know, we can't just copy big bank technology. We have to differentiate, you know, the value that we offer to our clients in terms of innovative products and services. So we can't blame legacy technology for every single problem because consumers have changed, you know, and I think that even the big banks are having their problems continually engaging customers, but they've got the scale to be able to fail.
Right. Well, I've seen some research recently that indicates that the bigger banks are seeing this consumer behavior shift faster than some of the smaller community banks. But you know, the other element of this, which again has come through the Twitter feed, just another comment from Serge, is that, you know, the bigger banks might be able to absorb some of these risks in terms of trying some innovations, and if it doesn't completely work out, they haven't lost everything. But it's, you know, you can't make as many bets as a smaller bank, can you? So how do you decide between, you know, option A, B, and C when, you know, you don't have that flexibility of making a couple of attempts at it, a couple of those things don't try, but one really, really works well?
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of what JP and other similar groups are doing. It's almost like a shared risk pool where banks can work in a new space and kind of learn as they go. So it's almost like our own incubator of sorts. You also have to, I think, really choose partners that are taking a test and learn approach and are looking at small experiments that they could go across their hundreds and potentially thousands of bank clients. We've done a lot of navel gazing, really at our bank and have made a lot of changes. You know, we've got a new CEO and a new CIO. So our bank's leadership and processes, I think, are really changing to be looking at not only how digital is changing our very revenue model, but we're evolving, I think, at the right time just to ensure our long-term viability. The fintech partners we choose to do business with need to help us differentiate the solutions toward revenue than what we're seeing in big banks. They have that space. So if those fintech players aren't going to help us evolve, they themselves are really going to have to worry about being in business.
Mm. How often do you find yourself then saying to these vendors, come on, guys, we can't wait for you to do this anymore, and pushing these guys to action, right?
Yeah, so that's, what I look at is when I need to change interfaces or if I need to add a function, I'm looking at them to sort of open up their platforms. We're looking at that all the time, not only from sort of our online and mobile providers, but our core. They need to open up their applications so that we could write unique interface applications to them for things like perpetual loan and credit offers through our channels. Because if only one or two of the clients are sort of forward-thinking and saying, look, these are potential revenue opportunities that we need to push through mobile, or something as simple as, embedding additional ways to do alerts and notifications to offer additional engagement. If we're only one or two clients out of a couple thousand that a fintech player is really pushing for those things, then it may not get done. So we have to, say, look, we're going to have to go to external development and potentially do this ourselves. And a lot of institutions just don't have the size and scale to do that.
Mm. So a quick shout out from Jason Cobb on the Twitter feed. He said, innovation comes after role clarity. How do you build consensus at the board level particularly, at the board level or at the retail exco level? How do you build consensus on that focus? You talked about social, you talked about mobile, you talked about the user experience, which I'm guessing extends to the web and the call center, for example. Mm-hmm. How do you get consensus from the management, the executive, in terms of that direction, that clarity?
Well, I think we have a lot of buy-in from top to bottom. I think that the last couple of years we've done a really good job of working with the board to educate from top down, the changes that are happening inside the industry. And so I've presented sort of wide-angle lens view of financial services and then drilled it down a bit to very tactical changes that we can make. Sometimes, in a smaller institution, really innovation is getting those things done, prioritizing those really big hits that may not even result in a huge change to operations, but it's making it that much more efficient. So sometimes, deciding not to do things is really the innovation, and making those minor changes to streamline a process is really the big hit.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about your team. Tell me about, I know you've talked about your reliance on the vendors, but in a $3 billion asset bank, who do you have internally that surrounds you, that helps you execute this strategy on a day-to-day basis? And who are you going to be looking for in the near term?
Yeah, so we've actually got a pretty big IT group and a pretty big operation group for a bank our size. And so we have a lot of internal development and a lot of internal expertise and a lot of, experienced technologists and bankers here. And that's a luxury. That's a luxury that I didn't have when I was at a smaller institution where everything was outsourced. That number one, I think, is a strength for us. And so the other piece to that, I think, is really a mindset of, as we move to perhaps externalize some of these sourced technologies through partnerships, we have this sort of renewed vigor, I think, in ensuring that they're delivering a roadmap that equates to what we feel we need to be competitive in the San Francisco Bay Area market, which is already, very overbanked and already seeing consolidation. And it's also, one of the hot spots for technology and uses of technology.
Right. And in respect to Mechanics Bank building, are you guys limited by geography, or do you go outside of California?
No, we're pretty much in California, pretty much in Northern California. So I think it's...
You expected to stay like that?
Well, I think that any bank of this size really is in that middle spot. You know, it's not so small that, boy, what are we going to do next year to survive? But it's not so big that, you know, it can't look at things like M&A, and it can't look at, you know, really aggressive growth. But at the same time, we don't have the luxury to say, you know, we're going to do a direct bank sort of initiative to bring in on the savings side things that we can do on the lending side. Right now, I think every bank is looking for revenue opportunities. I think every bank is looking for growth and scale and efficiency. And I think that's a 4 or 5 year process ever since the downturn started.
Right. So can you tell us about what you're working on at the moment that's got you excited or interested in, that's interesting for us?
I think that what we've been doing with mobile has been pretty impressive in terms of maybe just keeping up with the Joneses in terms of building out account transfers and person-to-person payments and, you know, contextual offers based on proximity with Cardlytics. Certain things like just launching this past year mobile deposits has been amazing to me at how quickly our behavior is shifting to mobile. The type of content that we're building out in a new site we're designing to really cross-sell more contextually, I think, services to our customers is really interesting and engaging to me. But what's already happening is that, you know, we're seeing the shift to mobile just in our content, just in our usage with our other applications. Everything is shifting to mobile, and it's happening much, much quicker than I would have thought. I'm looking at ways to put offers in front of our customers via mobile, and so we've got some interesting partnerships that we're looking at there. Again, it's just seeking revenue, seeking engagement, seeking more depth to the relationships that we have with our customers, primarily through mobile.
Is there anything that if you're giving some advice to another digital lead who's just taken on a role in a similar organization, or a bigger or smaller organization, obviously mobile is a strong focus, revenue from mobile, everyone seems to be talking about that at the moment, but is there an area you would say, look, don't waste your time on it right now, or don't get distracted by this? Is there areas you would say that it's not the right time to focus on specific types of innovation?
Well, in my mind, you know, what we're seeing from not only the experiments from international banks in terms of, you know, really redesigning sort of a personalized, focused mobile app, I think when banks that I talk to are talking about, you know, really revamping their online channel as opposed to mobile, I'm struck by the number of banks that don't have mobile applications that do simple transactional capabilities. We're talking about, you know, less than 50% of all banks in the U.S. have mobile banking, and I think less than a third have mobile apps. So I'd flip it the other way to say, you know, rather than what shouldn't you be doing, it's a quote I like.
Hygiene factor stuff.
Yeah, so... A quote from Neff Hudson from USAA, I heard him say at a conference, is that generating ideas in areas like mobile isn't really the issue, it's focus. I would focus on building out that mobile application, because before we had updated apps, before we had mobile deposit, that's what everybody was clamoring for. And now that we've got that and we're building from that and building more transfer capabilities, more PFM capabilities, more engagement, that's really how we're going to continue to differentiate ourselves.
So, would you say it's fair? Would it be fair to say that this year will be about consolidating mobile for most banks, mobile deposit, P2P payments, and having a mobile app is sort of the hygiene factor for banks across the U.S.?
Absolutely, and I would say the next level is going to be, how are you going to actually make the data within that mobile app more interesting? And so, you know, I like the example that you gave internationally, but I would point to, you know, neobanks like yours and Movin and at yep. Simple, and saying that, you know, adding imagery to the transaction level, or yep. what we're seeing with numbers from Germany coming in, in terms of making a more of a storyline like we see from the French bank soon, that's really what we should be focused on, is making a story out of transactions for our consumers at a very personalized level, and then getting them engaged at that sort of data, much like you would your health data through, you know, like a Fitbit app, and it's something that you want them to come back into. Then you have the ability to present offers. You have the ability to drive revenue from that channel.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Brad. That's been a great introduction. So what I'd like to do at this point is let's have a quick break, and then we'll come back after the break, and let's talk 5 to 10 years out where this is going to go, and we'll ask JP to join the discussion as well. Is that okay?
Sounds great.
Great. So you're with Brett King on Breaking Banks. We've just been talking to Brad Limer from Mechanics Bank, and we'll be back right after this break to talk a little bit more about the future of bank innovation.
Always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now toll free 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Attend the Payments Conference to meet the forward-thinking leaders and disruptors who are transforming how we pay and get paid. Get a glimpse into the next wave of payments innovations and challenges through fast-paced interactive demonstrations, educational sessions, and a buzzing exhibit hall. Register now at payments.nacha.org. Payments 2014 is presented by NACHA, the Electronic Payments Association, the recognized leader in payment system education. The Payments Conference. Transform imagination into strategic innovation. Register today at payments.nacha.org.
Game-changing technologies are transformational, exciting, and disruptive for a reason. They shake up the status quo. They get you thinking about new ways to scale, compete, and grow. They move you in amazing new directions. You're invited to take a coffee break with Game Changers on Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for our special series on today's top big data innovators. Learn about emerging big trends and technologies and how you can grow your business and profit. Startup Focus with Game Changers, presented by SAP on the Business Channel. We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
You're back with Breaking Banks. I just wanted to just share with you guys just quickly before we bring JP and Brad back in. You know, we started this show back in May of last year. Time has flown. You know, we're now January of 2014. The show's been running about 8 months. But I will tell you guys that last month we did hit a milestone, whereas we reached 50,000 listeners on the show last month. So my sincere thanks to you guys. It's a very interesting. We get quite a good live audience listening, but we still get a lot of traction off the podcast downloading later. And Brad, I note that you often listen to the podcast in traffic on the way to work.
Yeah, you know, I love that. I'm sitting in traffic like for a couple hours a day, and that podcast, I just turn it on, and if I don't catch it live, it's a great sort of companion for my trip.
Well, that's fantastic. So thanks for that. And now, JP, let's bring you back into the conversation here too. I always like to sort of look out to that five, 10 year mark, and because that's a good indicator of what we should be doing now in terms of where we need to get to. So 5 to 10 years out, what do you think the landscape's going to be like in the US, and Europe in respect to this field of innovation? Is this just going to be a core competency and everyone's going to be doing it, or is it still going to be a differentiator?
Well, you know, I always like Bill Gates' quote, we tend to overestimate what will happen in 5 years and underestimate what will happen in 20. But that said, if you were stuck in a cave for the past 5 years, you'd be pretty shocked at the explosion of smartphones and apps and cross-platform experiences across a lot of industries, you know, this so-called second screen in the entertainment space. And I think that that explosion will continue. We've seen a lot of stuff. Chris Skinner's posted some good things about the increasing pace of adoption and innovation. And so I think that will continue. I think the industry will continue to consolidate, particularly here in the U.S., where we do have so many banks. I think
you want to give some specific estimates on what sort of consolidation we're going to see?
Oh, geez.
Do you have some idea of that?
Yeah, if you say 10 years, 7,000 banks today, my guess is it would be half of that or less. Right, maybe 3,500 banks, maybe 2,000 banks would not be a shocking number to me. That's still a huge number of banks, right?
Well, in a single country, it'll still be more than all of Europe has.
Exactly, and I think though the tail will largely become, and one of the driving factors that will cause that consolidation is kind of a tail of the haves and the have-nots, and that line of thinking usually kind of talks about the wealth disparity amongst consumers, but I think it's going to be about the ability to iterate and to execute amongst the banks and to build on, you know, Brad and Neff's quote earlier. It's exactly right. It's not coming up with ideas. That's not the hard part. It's actually getting things done and executing. And I think those that are good at it will continue to have great success, and they'll continue to consolidate market share, and those that don't will fail to exist.
Very interesting. Brad, what are your thoughts? Where, you know, think 5 to 10 years out, where are banks like Mechanics Bank going to be sitting?
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll be in that 10 to 15 billion plus range, because the coming, you know, consolidation that you've been talking about is really real. The top five banks have 44% of all assets right now. That's up from just 9.7% in 1990. That's crazy. You know, the top 100 banks in the U.S. have 81% of deposits and 75% of, you know, lending relationships. So, you know, I'm looking at 40%, 50% fewer banks, maybe that 2,500 to 3,500 number, and probably 50 to 60% fewer credit unions. So we have to keep moving. It's simultaneously the most interesting and terrifying time to be in banking, financial services. So, I don't know.
I wonder why we don't have more excitement in respect to this. You know, when you typically talk about innovation, you get a response that, well, it's really hard because of regulation and because of process and policy and legacy systems. Are bankers just worn out because of the structure of the way banks work, or can we get this excitement and energy into the system, JP? I mean, I guess that's what BIC is about, is trying to create that excitement and energy. But can we turn that around?
Well, you know, let's be honest about something. The skills and behaviors that have been rewarded in the banking industry are all about avoiding risk and maximizing short-term revenues. And innovation is about taking risks. Sure, they should be small, measured risks that don't put the company in harm's way. But trying new things and learning what works and what doesn't from real-life customer feedback, that's not how most bankers operate. So for banks to be successful in the future, they're really going to have to kind of broaden their organizational DNA. And that's not the way most banks operate. And it's certainly not the way the regulators are encouraging the banks to operate today. So I think that's going to be a huge differentiator.
Brad, just on that point, in terms of, and I know we've sort of skewed off the 5 to 10 year viewpoint a bit, but how do you think from a regulator perspective, this is often a process of education? You've got a situation where, you know, I've spoken to the Fed and the CFPB, U.S. Treasury, a bunch of the state banking commissioners and so forth. And often the leadership is very keen to ensure that, the U.S. market is innovative. But when it comes to the enforcement and the survey teams are actually on the ground working day to day, you know, these are guys that, they know the regs, they've been in banking for 30 years. It's really, really hard to get those guys sort of making those changes. How do you guys work with a regulator to ensure that these innovations you're making in the market occur smoothly so that the regulators don't start getting antsy about it?
Yeah, I mean, think about that. You know, the Fed and the CFPB are saying, yeah, we need to do faster payments. You know, we need to change how quick we resolve transfers interbank. And then when you get to the ground level, they're like, oh, you know, you got to be really worried about what you tweet. So just like in banking, I think that there's a generational shift about what we need and want to do at the sort of top level. That's the message. Versus the tactical to the DNA part of JP's response that really needs to sync up. And so we can't, as an industry, look at, you know, risk and regulation and the regulators as anything more than guidelines, because when we do something at a community level that is, you know, 10 times less risky than what a large institution does, we're more scared, I think, of the regulators than what the scale of the larger institution will deliver. Everything is changing in financial services. You know, we're looking at even large banks, in my mind, not having the scale to necessarily be around in the shape that they are in 20 years. That's how quickly I think things will change over the next decade.
So that's very, very interesting. We talk a lot about the utility of banking, some great tools that are coming now, mobile, driving, a ton of stuff. You know, who are going to be the players within the bank in 5 to 10 years' time? Who's going to be leading the bank internally, Brad, in respect to, and JP will ask you this as well later, but, you know, what are the core skills that banks need to be investing in right now?
Well, I look at, you know, agility, curiosity, and a little bit of knowledge about banking, but not too much to keep you in the mud. I think that banking in general is moving away from this idea that we're going to have a client for life. We're going to be the primary financial institution. We're really looking at primary financial applications, because it's not wallet share. It's about which app are you going to use to understand where your money's going from both a consumer and business standpoint. We need to be available and top of mind to our customers when they reach into their pocket, when they reach to for their mobile device or their glasses or whatever wearable we're going to have in the next few years, about those choices they make. And so as everything kind of moves toward digital, how many banks, how many credit unions are going to be there? That's a great question. Why some banks of scale think that they're going to be there for sure? You know, I'd be worried if I were any institution. I'm almost more intrigued about the data behind financial transactions and how many of those 909 payment startups on AngelList are going to survive in the next
It keeps growing, doesn't
anything
it?
Else.
Yeah. I love that stat on the angel list. It just keeps going up and up and up, all these new payment startups. JP, you know, what are the core skills that are coming into the Innovators Council, and what do banks really need to be getting smart about investing in terms of skills and competency?
Well, the safety and soundness piece is never going to go away. So there's still a career
But doesn't that become an algorithm?
To some degree, perhaps. But my point is, I think if at the end of the day, you know, you're all about figuring out a new way something could go wrong, there's probably a job for you at a bank now and 20 years from now. But it's increasingly, and I touched on this earlier, right? We talked about the choices that consumers had were limited to various flavors of the same thing. And that is no longer true. They're used to not be any substitution. And so having people like Brad described, with curiosity and the ability to get in and tinker with things and not be too caught up with the history of the industry and be bound to tradition, I think is really critical. At the same time, I think there'll be plenty of banks who will be happy to relegate themselves to that utility position, right? They're safe and strong and stable, and money will flow in and flow out. And the industry's actually quite good at that. For all of our complaints, that's really not the
right
issue.
Yeah, we know how to do that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that will continue. And it'll be really interesting to see. I don't think many banks themselves will be great innovators. Many aren't today, and I think that will be true in the future. But I think there opens up a whole middle band of banks that are creative enough to partner with the right people to put those innovations in place. And again, as we already talked about, executing those ideas.
Yep. Now, Brad, we had a comment from the Twitterati. When are banks going to start visually designing customer experiences, ads, sites, apps, like the rest of industries? Because, when you look at banking generally from a user experience perspective, there's some sites out there that haven't changed in years. So when are we going to start to see banks really committed to great user experience and that being embedded in the thinking?
There was a great article within the last week about how design and great design is taking over Silicon Valley. And I think when I look at applications from the large banks on down, you're right. There's sort of a dearth of really, really good design. Even ones that functionally are excellent that I personally use, I would say that the design is lacking. I think it's the era of Snapchat and WhatsApp and everything else that is driving those changes. And so, I look at design a lot more than I think a lot of my peers do. And when I look at, companies like Money Desktop or companies like that that really put a focus on design, that's got to be part of your decision making when you're considering partnerships. So I think the next 5 years, what we're seeing, again, from direct banks like Numbers and from Moovin and Simple and others, it's just going to get better and better. But that's, right, that's going to be absolutely critical.
Fantastic. Well, Brad, thank you very much. We've wanted to have you on the show since we started, so appreciative that you were able to join the show. And JP, thank you also for joining the show again. You were with us at the Google show a few weeks ago, but thanks for making the time out this week.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Brad.
Great. So you've been with Brett King on Breaking Banks. And next week, we're going to be talking about innovation coming out of Asia. So be sure to join us then. Thanks very much for joining this week's episode of Breaking Banks. See you next week.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.